For more on all this, let's talk to the man who was the man Monday night all around town. ESPN broadcast every single sector of Lincoln Financial Field Monday night. And he's with us every Thursday morning at this time, Jason Kelsey. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks for having me, guys.
Good, but how are you, pal?
I'm great. I'm had a great weekend. Had a fun one outside of the birds losing. So
you look skinny.
Do I?
Yeah. How much do you weigh?
I don't even know. I don't know if I like that.
Do you have a scale at your house?
Yeah, I've been stuck at 275. I keep losing weight a little bit.
He looks lighter than that.
You're lighter than that.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I didn't eat a sausage, egg, and cheese McMuffin yet today, so maybe I'm still pretty light.
You're not on the John Ritchie plan of retiring and packing on 50. Yeah. Deuce was another guy that packed
50.
Deuce retired and
it was more than 50.
It was more than 50. Yeah,
but I didn't have a scale. I didn't have a scale at my house because I only stepped on the scale at work. And so then I stepped on the place at the airport where they weigh bags, and it said 305 point something. Yeah. And I was like, oh, they calibrated heavy because they want everyone to pay more.
Yeah, no
so
way
I
that's
didn't
right.
believe that I was three bills, but I really was.
Classic.
I was three bills.
So, Jason, we'll get to the game and the impact and implications and all that in a moment. Let's just start with you Monday night. You were all over the place. Was it independent of the loss prior to that? Was it a really fun night for you? I mean, the Foles thing, the ESPN thing, that must have been really cool.
Yeah, it was incredible. And even before that, I was out in the parking lot with a bunch of the fans. One of the tailgates were like grilling, smoking a Gator, which I was like, is this like a Philadelphia tradition? We smoke Gator in Philadelphia? It doesn't seem very regional, but it was a blast.
Wait, so it was like on a spit?
Yeah, I mean, they also had cheesesteaks like and they had other stuff there. No, it was like an offset
reptile?
Smoker. Like a big freaking alligator. It was stuffed with like cream cheese or something like that.
Was it like spinning?
It was good.
Wow. You know, like they would with the pig?
It was just sitting in that thing.
Was it tasty?
It was actually good. And I've had fried gator before in Florida. And that's, I mean, you fry any piece of meat, it's pretty good.
Yeah, that makes it good.
This was good. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Just
it was
answer
kind of like
your
lobster
question.
A little bit.
Wow.
Yeah. Jason, it is not cheesy. a Philly thing. Just to answer your question.
Typically not.
It's like lobster.
No.
Jason. It's gnarly looking, though.
I'll bet. So we're to the point, you know, last year at the end of the year, it felt like we finished with a players only at some point. Players only meeting.
Yeah.
This year, at the start of the year, they close the doors on the coaches and say, hey, players only meeting after the second game. How often do players only meetings happen? And how bad a sign is it that they keep happening with this team?
Yeah, I think players only meetings usually only happen when you are grossly underperforming on the field, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I never really liked player meetings. It felt like we were just doing it kind of to do it, like because everybody has to do it when you're kind of struggling. It's like now we have to have a players meeting, but it's like we're already having
the
same discussions. Yeah, and some guys are very authentic with it and very good at it. And I think that when you have good leadership, they can, you know, force guys to really take accountability in a way that's more apparent to their peers, which is different than I think the accountability being portrayed to the coaches in some ways. So I've been a part of them where they make a difference and they're really good. And then there's other ones where it's like, you know, there's so much wrong here that I don't know that we're, you know, really doing much by having this. Mm-hmm. But you always kind of go into it with an open mindset. But I think that these guys early in the season, they know that they should have just won that game. So looking at the context of this, they all know that they, talent-wise, they're there. They have to execute better. They have to play better and run defense especially.
Yeah.
And I think that accountability side of it should go a long way.
Jason, so it's Thursday morning. Eagles have a game on Sunday. Obviously, the team has to move on to this upcoming Sunday. I mean, it has to. And it already has begun. Game plan, the whole deal, practices. I'm curious. You know, we, though, haven't gotten over Monday night. It's still, you know, Monday is still a bigger topic for us and how we feel than upcoming Sunday. How tough is it for a player to get over a brutal loss?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it's easier for the player than probably the fan because you don't have a choice. You have to focus now on the Saints. Like, you know, you get a day or two to really worry about that. But, I mean, if you're still thinking about last week at this point, like, you should be – all of your focus should be on the Saints. And they need to – I mean, there's going to be some carryover. You know, they ran outside zone at will at us this last Monday. And that's like all New Orleans is doing right now with Kubiak's, I think his son, right?
His son.
It's
that's
like
right.
the exact same yeah. stuff they're going to get. So, you know, they're going to have an answer for that for
sure. So, Jason, this is the first game in your life. You're an Eagle, but it's the first game in your life that you watched a game that the Eagles lost that you were an Eagles fan.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a fan now.
For sure.
So to speak. So when you, you know, think in the fandom terms, how concerned are you with the defensive line as it relates to rushing the quarterback and stopping the run? How worried are you there?
I think the antenna's up for sure. They've struggled to get after the passer in 2 weeks now. I think that Brazil, I understood, the surface is a little bit slick. Yesterday, it's hard, or on Monday, sorry. Monday was difficult because when they're running the ball like that, they're staying out of the situations where it's really conducive to rush the passer. I think that last year we would say something, and I think I always liked, you got to earn the right to rush the passer. If you're not successful in first and second down in this league, you're not going to get the opportunities to get the sacks. Like really, the majority of these sacks are going to come on third and long situations where the quarterback has to throw the ball because they need to pick up a first down, and they stayed out of that. And not only stay out of that, they stay out of a drop back. Like they're doing run and play action the majority of the game. And then when you do get a drop back, there's no type of rhythm you can develop. So I just think, to me, the whole thing with them starts with stopping the run. They're really good at north and south runs this last week. They're a physical group, interior. They need to figure out how to stop the outside zone. That was the big thing that just jumped out right away on the film of me. It's like they were getting cut out on the backside. They were getting displaced oftentimes on the front side, and they were losing their gaps. And I think, to me, when you're losing your gap, you're getting cut off. Like those are very correctable things. And you can, and I think Vic tried to do a little bit in the second half with some blitzes and some slants and things to help those guys. But they got to get that figured out.
Good. Well, listen, I'm glad to hear you say it's very correctable. I really hope that they correct it because, look, 15 games to go, and I don't want to see an average football team. None of us do. 215-592-9494. All right, your chance to weigh in as Jason's with us, as he is every Thursday, from about 7:30 to 8:30. Let's go to the phones. Three different issues on the table. The Eagles, the whole shebang. Phillies, obviously a lesser topic today, but they'll probably make the playoffs later today. Two ways you can do it, if the Braves lose or if the Phillies win. And then, and by the way, Rhys Hoskins celebrating last night. He hits the home run, and then, of course, the Brewers make it. And then the third, the arena. What you make of the announcement yesterday by the mayor and where you want to see the arena built or stay in South Philadelphia. Ken and Cinnamon. Ken, good morning.
Good morning, friends. How are you today?
Doing all right, Ken.
Jason, what a privilege to talk to you. I just admire the hell out of you. I just need to say that.
Thank you, Ken.
Before I get to the Eagles, just 2 points real quick. The arena is an abomination, and I'm happy to explain to you guys on another call when I'm not eating into my time with Mr. Kelsey.
Give me your 15 seconds. Just
I want to hear it.
Yeah.
There's people that live there, and the underlying question is not how it makes the billionaire's life better, not how it makes the organization's life better, but does it make the lives better of the people that live there? And there is no world in which putting that arena there makes the lives of the people that live there better.
I agree with you.
And the government should never be in the business of making your life worse. That's just kind of what I think. And shout out to the state of Pennsylvania, PIAA sanctioning girls flag football. I can't wait to see our girls smoke the world in the Olympics in yet another sport in 3 years. So
that's yeah, baby.
I'm still that's trying to figure awesome. Out how we lost 3-on-3 basketball. Like, I don't quite get it. Like, we win 5-on-5, but we lose 3-on-3.
Because I'm all still kind of. You're playing on the 5-on-5.
Yeah, well, how about you take the leftovers? Top 12, 5-on-5. Next 12. 3-on-3.
Yeah,
three.
I think Tyrese Maxey would have looked pretty good in that 3-on-3.
Why do I need Jimmer Fredette or whoever the hell was it? Like, I forget who it was.
Jimmer Fredette.
It was one of those
Jimmer
kind of guys.
Fredette.
Whatever that
Fredette.
Guy's.
Fredette.
Whatever
Fredette.
That guy's. Like, why isn't Maxey and Damian Lillard and, like, I don't know, the next guys in 3-on-3?
I'm with you.
I mean, that
why not? Let's get the gold medals, man.
You actually made sense there.
All right, Ken, give me an Eagles point quickly, please.
So you guys do a great job of interviewing Nick on you know, after the day after the game, so I appreciate the job you guys did yesterday. My question for Jason, I'm really curious to hear from you, Jason. What is your reaction? How does it make you feel when you hear the crowd, and I'll just say the chorus in the city of Philadelphia, that kind of suggests that Nick Sirianni doesn't really do anything around here?
Interesting question, Ken. Before he answers that, you give me an answer. Who or what got shortchanged? You can win the Phillies tickets.
I'm going to be there anyway, but I'll tell you what, this guy gets shortchanged all the time. Paul Giamatti is one of the best actors in the world.
He is great.
Nobody ever mentions
him. Yeah, now I think he gets mentioned a lot.
He got nominated for an Oscar this past year.
He's pretty darn good. All right, so, Jason, the people that rip Sirianni, there are many, and there are many that say, like, what does he even do?
Yeah.
What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's not calling plays, obviously, which there are a number of, I would probably say the majority of head coaches either call plays or at least are very involved offensively or defensively. But there are a handful of coaches, two of which were in both of the championship games, and Dan Campbell and John Harbaugh, that don't do that. And I think the reality is there is a mold where, as a head coach, you are really a organizational leadership linchpin. We saw that, I think, a little bit with Pete Carroll, too, throughout the years. I don't know how much he was definitely on the defensive side, but, I mean, it's tough to know what all the other coaches do, so I'll just focus on Nick. I think there is incredible merit, in my opinion, to having somebody who is kind of the center in command for all of this, and their main job is to steer the team and the offense and the defense in the proper direction. And they do that with, one, great knowledge of the game, but also, two, great personal relationships, great character. And I think that Nick really does all of that well. He's a great communicator. He really is. And I think that there are certain things that, in ways that is more important as the head coach. And I think that's why you're seeing some of these coaches that just do that have success. Because they're, sometimes when it's like an offensive coach or a defensive coach, I think the players feel like that guy's only on that side of the ball and that's disconnected from the other side. Whereas I feel like Nick gets the benefit of, hey, I'm looking out for what's best for the Philadelphia Eagles, and I'm going to focus all my time and attention here. I'm going to focus on situational football, which I know everybody's crushing him for the decision to pass. But I can assure you, he goes into great lengths himself and as a staff into compounding tons of numbers on
this
stuff.
Well, we heard him talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, we hear him talk about it. He goes on and on and on for 5 minutes. I don't know that he does a good job with it because he goes on and on and on for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But I look, doesn't it, the idea, my concern for this team is that Nick's credibility took a hit when the initial plan for Nick didn't work. You know, the initial plan was play caller, offensive guy comes in, and that was, you know, not the way it went. That we got
two different times, 2021 and 2023. Basically, try to go be Sean McVay. Okay, you're not Sean McVay.
Yes.
So, John, you think it undermined his authority in the locker room, right?
I hope that it didn't. I think that it would have for me if I was a player who witnessed that occurring, and I want to be sure, and I don't know now at this point in time, that it feels like everything that everything keeps changing, and he keeps getting stripped of these responsibilities. If I'm a player, I see that, I pick up on that. Doesn't that hinder his ability to be an authority figure to some of these guys?
Let's go. So 2021, he's calling plays, and he hands over play calling to Shane Steichen. So by that account, like, you would think guys would have lost respect that year for him, right? We go to the Super Bowl the next year. Like, I don't think that – I get what you're saying, and I understand that, like, whenever a coach struggles, that there is, like, that type of reaction from a locker room. But to me, like, the play calling didn't work out in 2021. It didn't work out last year. There's multiple factors as to why it didn't work out in both years. I think that Nick has proven that he's very good at all these other things that a head coach does. And I think he's very good at it. Now, so for me, I don't necessarily think that, like, one correlates to another. If he's not a great play caller, which I think that Nick could be a great play caller in this league, just hasn't worked out. That doesn't have any bearing on his ability to lead organizationally, how he assesses the team, how he addresses players, how he communicates. I think that these are different skill sets and different job details. And I think he's proven in 2022 that he can operate that side at a very, very high level.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I think about it. And yeah, I think that to me, he's already proven he can operate at that side of it very well.
I'll say this. Obviously, this is not breaking news. He's got to know his job's on the line. He's got to know what happened Monday night. It was a setback for the purpose of being the coach next year. And I got to tell you guys, seeing Belichick at that game on Monday, I mean, mm-hmm. Belichick's going to be in this division next year. He is. He is either next year going to coach the Dallas Cowboys, the Philadelphia Eagles, or the New York Giants. You can book it.
I'll tell you what. You can book it. Prior to that game Monday, I was positive it was going to be the Dallas Cowboys or, you know, maybe one of the other ones, but likely the Dallas Cowboys.
I mean, one of them is going to finish in third or fourth place.
It's like scary.
He's going to one of them.
Well, it's scary that if things go the way Monday went, it could be the Eagles.
Well, like I don't think it's scary. I mean, it'd be disappointing if the Eagles have to fire Sirianni because they have a bad year.
But
I would embrace
it's so much more imminent than what I imagined. Like this idea of Bill Belichick. Like now we've actually seen him
in person,
standing there ready, not coaching.
And by the way, when you hear him commentate, for those that thought like, "Oh, he's so old," no, he's not.
No,
like he did not have players the last 4 or 5 years, and that's his fault as the general manager guy in New England. But Jason, Bill Belichick still knows football. I mean, this is not Connie Mack when he was 90 years old managing the Phillies in 1950. Ruben, you like that? Excuse me, the A's. The A's. I mean, Connie Mack was 88 years old managing the A's in 1950.
You don't feel he was connected to the players?
I would
at that
tend
point?
To think it was probably an issue. I mean, Belichick, Jason, he's an impressive broadcaster, too.
He is. He's got a personality, and he's finally able to let it show unadulterated. I think. Yeah, he's got tremendous knowledge of the game. I always hated playing Bill because you knew that he was going to mix the front up. He was very game plan specific in the way he coordinated defenses, and it was frustrating to go against.
Yeah. Did he create a template last year in week one that frustrated you guys, that you saw remnants of that week two, week three, week four, week five, week six?
No, Bill, I don't think so, and I think that I know so. We didn't see a lot of the same stuff that Bill did. And Bill's very unique in the way that he tries to defend, as opposed to like the San Francisco 49ers, completely different style defense. Mm-hmm. Todd Bowles, completely different. Wink Martindale, like head and night and day different. So I think there are a lot of things that we struggled against. New England was a great defense against anybody last year early on. I mean, they had like a top two or three defense before they started having the injuries with Judon, and their offense was just god-awful. Yeah. And it's really hard to be a good defense when your offense is that bad, just from like a numbers of like opportunity standpoint.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, you know, obviously Bill's an incredible defensive coach. He's an incredible head coach. But, you know, two games in, Nick Sirianni, I know he's a great coach, so I look forward to seeing how these guys play this week in a really, I mean,